When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Record Rangers podcast. My name's Gavin Berry and I'm delighted to see joining us live from Churchill's in Glasgow Airport. Is that the bar in Glasgow Airport, Andy? I'm not sure. It's Andy Newport.
Rovers return.
Starbucks.
Three plate. They're all good. They're all sorted, so...
Is that just to calm nerves?
I'm not going to need it.
Is that just to go over your fear of flying?
I'm a frequent flyer, Gav, as you well know, so been over the course before, so no. All set, all ready to go.
Obviously, you're en route, or you'll shortly be en route to Lisbon. What's your route? What is your route, just out of curiosity?
Flying through Heathrow and then on to Lisbon, so we'll get to Lisbon tonight about 10 o'clock. Check at the hotel, ready for the press conferences tomorrow and the big game on Thursday. So looking forward to it. It should be an interesting week for Rangers ahead.
Yep. Okay, so you're gonna be drinking to calm your nerves, but who should be most nervous on Thursday? That's the question. On Saturday at 5:15 or 5:00, you would have thought Rangers, but unbelievably, as always seems to be the case when Scottish teams play teams in Europe, they always seem to be in crisis, but this actually seems to be a genuine crisis. Yeah. Benfica 5-0 pasting by Porto on Sunday, just 24 hours after Rangers had lost 2-1 to Motherwell. That's coming on the back of a defeat to Sporting Lisbon, their other City rivals. So it makes for an interesting first leg in the Estadio de Luz, yeah?
Absolutely. I mean, it seems like Rangers, if they were to get Benfica at the right time, this seems to be it. I mean, I don't think they've lost a game since around November time, before, as you see, that loss to Sporting. So, you know, it looks like Rangers are getting them at the right time. But then again, as you look at the result of the weekend, the performance of the weekend, more worryingly, just the spate of injuries that this Rangers team is going through right now, it makes you wonder what kind of performance is going to be capable for the next team over there. But certainly, you know, Benfica don't look to be in the best sort of nick themselves, so that should give Rangers some confidence ahead of the Thursday night.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose we have to put it into reality. Yes, Benfica are struggling, but we've got a piece of the website today just comparing the squads, as we've done before, you know, many of the European ties. But I mean, there's like a £98 million gulf in squad value or something like that. So, although Rangers have proven in Europe over the years, I mean, they have, you know, they've taken some big scalps, but it just shows you the size of the task, doesn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, as you say, they've got two World Cup winners in their squad. I mean, that tells you what Rangers are up against. Obviously, like Luke Clement talked a couple of weeks ago about what Benfica did to one of his old sides last year when they got to, I think it was the last day of the Champions League. So this is a team that are, you know, experienced at the very top level in Europe. You know, bags of experience, bags of quality, you know. Most of the Rangers have experience of being over in the Stadium of Light. I'll go with the anglicised pronunciation, if you don't mind, Gav. But, you know, Rangers have experience of being over there. But obviously, that was COVID season. No fans. They had a look at, you know, there's still a fair few guys from that team remaining, but you know, this will be a totally different proposition. We've been a 65,000 sellout. You know, as you say, they've had a difficult week, Benfica, so they'll be looking to you know, put down some sort of performance that gets the fans back on side. I mean, you know, I think this is a team that will have, you know, expectations that they can go far, if not challenging for a European trophy. So Rangers, you know, they've got a lot to do. You know, they've got a huge task ahead of them. As you say, the injury, you know, situation is mounting up, that's going to sort of limit the manager's, you know, options going over to Portugal. But you know, Rangers have been over the course before in Europe. They've got to a final only 2 years ago. They'll have every confidence, I would believe, that they've got the experience they can get through these kind of ties. You've seen them go to places like Dortmund. They've been to, you know, Red Star Belgrade. They've been to Braga. They've been to, you know, Leipzig, big teams that are experienced in Europe and got results. Okay, this is there's a new element to this team, but the core element, the squad, your Taverniers, your Goldsons, your John Lundstroms have been over the course before, and we'll know how to get results in these kind of platforms. So, you know, say it should be an intriguing tie, and we'll be looking forward to it. I think it's going to be, you know, a wonderful atmosphere and a sort of iconic stadium. So it'll be real interesting to see how Rangers fare.
Yeah, and you make iconic stadium. I mean, you make the point that when Rangers played there before, it was COVID, it was empty. So it's, first of all, it's great for the fans to get the chance to go and sample the stadium. And we've touched on them being in a bit of crisis. Everything that I've sort of read in the last sort of couple of days, you know, former players and pundits giving their view are saying that, you know, if Roger Schmidt loses this tie, it could be the end for him. So in front of a full stadium, they're clearly under a bit of pressure. How much do you think Rangers can use that to their advantage?
Definitely, it can go in their advantage. It's one of those ones, if you can get an early goal, if you can, or limit them in the first 20 minutes and just, you know, turn the crowd against them, sort of thing that Rangers often have to sort of contend with when smaller teams come to Ibrox. So, you know, that could obviously play in their favour. But I think what Rangers will really be hoping is, you know, I think Rangers will get a bigger issue at home to deal with in terms of this Premiership battle. And I think the main thing is getting through these two legs without having any more injuries. I think that, for me, that would be the number one thing for Fleet Clement. I've seen some fans online, spoken to some guys around the game, around the ground at the weekend there, that are almost hitting that this game's a wee bit of a, you know, nuisance in a sense. You know, there is such a big prize at stake with this Premiership battle. You know, they're neck and neck with Celtic. The weekend was a slipper, but they thought they'd left the door open before events at Tynecastle. So, I think as much as the fans love a European adventure, they loved what they went through in the road to Seville just those 2 years ago. But a lot of guys are just thinking, get through these two ties, don't get any more injuries, and we'll see where we're at the end of that. If this happens to be the end of the road, okay, it's been a terrific journey so far. Nobody really expected Rangers to reach this stage after, you know, what the way the early part of the season was planning out. But the fact that they're now, you know, here, but back, more importantly, in this title race, I think, you know, it leaves the fans with a bit of a dilemma in terms of what they want to see most.
Yeah, I was going to ask that. Is it an inconvenience? You think of Ange Postecoglou's first season at Celtic. Remember, they had Bodo Glimt and they went out, and I think he rested players, didn't he? I mean, his team almost reflected the fact that the league was a priority, and, you know, and also they ended up going on to win the league. I think back to Rangers' European run all the way to the final in Manchester. Apparently, remember they had all those games going thick and fast. Apparently, when Nacho Novo scored that very late goal in Athens against Panathinaikos, Walter Smith was tearing his hair out. Didn't want to progress. But,
You just have to look back to Seville a couple of years ago, because on the road there, I mean, they lost Morelos, Roof got injured in the way there. You know, they were just, the time they got to the final, they were running on empty almost. And it was an achievement itself just to get there, given the exertions the team had to go through. And you're starting to do the same now. I mean, you've got Danilo out, you've got, you know, Rabbi Matondo, you've got Seema out now, Todd Cantwell, you know, Ross McCausland now. A huge doubt for Tez as well. So, I mean, it's just, you know, whatever team that Clement puts out, it'll just be a needs must, because, you know, there's not got much other option. And to us, I think you could say that the result gets muddled. It's partly down to just how leggy they looked at times. You know, as much as like they were devoid of some attacking inspiration, you know, they were so short in variety in the final third, especially when Cousin goes off and they have to play Fabio Silva. It doesn't mean that they can sort of change up the striker options. They have to put Roof on late. But they just looked a tired display. It looked like a team that have, you know, really had to go at the well a lot. I mean, as much as Fleet Clement has really tried to change this team around week to week, you know, he's been tinkering, he's doing that, and he spoke about the necessity of doing that, because in order to keep guys fresh, that option is now sort of taken away to a degree, because he really doesn't have many options left. I mean, you're now looking at, well, what does he do? And Lisbon, does he, you know, if he sticks with the same formation, does it mean he has to play Fabio Silva again, sort of off the left-hand side, with Dessers up front. Then you're thinking, well, if Dessers or Silva gets an injury, then Rangers are really, really short in terms of that, you know, cover through the middle. So, in that sense, it's, you know, it is a bit of a, you know, probably something an inconvenience they could do without. Maybe, as you say, maybe it is a kind of wee bit of that. But, you know, in the day, Rangers have made it this far on merit. I'm sure they want to go as far as they can. But I think if you were to ask the majority of Rangers fans, what would they want? You know, run at another European final, but at the expense of missing out another league title. I'm not sure many would pick that right now. Not at this stage in where Rangers redevelopment is. I think the bread and butter, the Premiership, is what's all important.
Did we see on Saturday why Rangers should have bought a striker in January? I mean, fans were crying out for it, whether it was Shankland or someone else. Shankland might not have been possible, it might have been priced out, but did we see on Saturday why they should have gone for a striker? I don't even think Dessers. I know Dessers is a lot of criticism, but even just looking along the front three, and I know that obviously as you think, the engine of this, but should they have bought a striker?
I think so. I think Cyril Dessers, and I've written this, and I wrote it at my match report at the weekend there, that he has come on leaps and bounds. You know, if you look at him before Clement and after Clement's arrival, it's no comparison. He was 3 goals in 9 or 10 games or something like that. Now he's a goal every other game. But in saying that, he still misses far too many chances that you would expect of a proper Rangers number 9. And, you know, like, that was a weekend there. I don't mean to put the blame for the result until it has gone. Definitely not. There was too many people in that Rangers team that were off. They went on their game that day. But he had chances that he didn't take. And there is this feeling that it takes him 3, 4, 5 chances for every one that he takes up, he puts away. So, you know, as you say, you're looking at Shankland. And, you know, he's, you know, continue this great season. I never really felt that was a doable deal. I never felt there was any sort of real interest from Rangers. There was a lot of talk around about it, but I never thought there was any noise from the club that would give hints to the fact that they were going to make a move from. Obviously, there might be some appreciation of what a very good player he is, but I'm not sure they were ever at the stage where they were going to make that offer. I think that's just because of the price tag. I think Hearts would be reluctant, given what they're playing for this season, getting European football, getting that third place. I think they'd be looking for £4 or £5 million, and having spent similar sums on a Cyril Dessers and had it not worked, I'm not sure Rangers were ever going to go out and spend that kind of money again unless they could have got rid of Dessers and recouped some of that money in January. So, but I definitely think not going out and at least getting somebody that's more of a penalty box striker. I mean, you've seen the difference in this team, even when Dessers plays up front to Silva. We all agree Silva's a very tidy footballer, but he's not a killer in a penalty box sense. He's not a guy that his whole game is based around getting goals, you know, Chris Boyd kind of fashion. Like, in the same way that I think Lawrence Shankland, and that's not to do with the service, because I think he's come on his game in terms of his build-up play, his general involvement in the overall game has come on leaps and bounds in, you know, the last few years. But at the end of the day, he's a guy whose whole reason for being is to score goals. And I think, you know, even Dessers, you know, he's too erratic, he's too flaky in the final third, and I think that will be the concern going into these final 9 games of the league season, and obviously the other games in Europe and the Scottish Cup.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, Andy, on Saturday, the funny thing was, there was so much build up to the home game against, after going top of the league, the build up was to the home game against Hearts, in Hearts third place, then away to Kilmarnock, really tough place to go, and they come through, the two of them. They then lose the one you expect them to win, home to Motherwell. And right away, people say, well, you know, they don't have the bottle for it. And, you know, every time you lose a game, the bottle's going to be questioned. Is that unfair? Do you think it was a question of bottle? Or is it just the type of result? You look back in any nip and tuck title race, one that either Rangers or Celtic come out on top of, and I guarantee you there will be a result like that. So when is it just a blip, and when is it bottom?
I think over the years we have questioned this team's, you know, ability to cope with pressure. But I don't think they go to Rugby Park and come back for a goal down if they've not got some solid, you know, character about them. Yeah, the weekend was disappointing. I think it just tends to... I think you tend to when you're questioning a team's bottle, you can tell it from the fans. The fans are, the fans' frustration shows in that. I don't think the fans were, as much as they were frustrated, I don't think they were the wits end with this team. And I kind of get the feeling that, yeah, there's an acceptance, and the manager said that enough times, there will be a blip. And I think you had in holding units, but I mean, you say, you look at it in the very narrow frame of this is a title race, you must win every game. How many teams over the course with 10, 15 games left in a title race have went and won every single one of them? It very rarely happens.
Yes.
So there are all, you have to take it, and I think there's just the small nuance points, the fact that they've had such a big week, you know, taking on an informed Hearts team. Yeah, they blew them away, but you know, just the lead up to that game would, you know, use up so much almost sort of nervous energy. Then you go to Rugby Park, and it's again a real war of attrition down there on that pitch against a Kamala team that, you know, that Derek McInnes has got so well organised and has got them going great guns. And then, I mean, I think you have to give Wallow credit. I mean, I thought Stuart Kettlewell got his tactics absolutely spot on. Five at the back, three absolute dogs in midfield, but guys with quality as well. Blair Spittle, Lennon Miller, by the way, what a player that boy's going to be. 17 year old, him going to Ibrox, just the quality showed time and time again. So they had a solid foundation that Rangers had to go and break down, but what they also had was a threat the other way. You know, I think it was Vale and Theo Bear up front, two guys with lots of pace, lots of power, again, quality in the ball. It just always meant that Rangers could never overly commit. And when they did, that's when Motherwell were able to just whip the ball in behind and just get them turning, get them chasing back towards their own goal and just disrupting that flow, that any time they get any a wee bit of momentum, Motherwell would just find a way to counter that attack on them. And I think that's to Stuart Kettlewell's, you know, major credit. So I think you have to give that. And I say the injuries, I mean, I think that's the big point. You know, they just, Rangers just lacked that variety in their play at times, and it was just a wee bit stuck into it. They're doing the same things time after time, and you know, that's just what happens when you're down to the bare bones. And so, yeah, it's a blip, but only if Rangers can struggle off. Listen, I think, you know, this game on Thursday night's about a free hit in that sense. I don't think too many Rangers fans, as long as it's not an utter doing it, you know, if they lose narrowly one or two goals, get it back to Ibrox, they'll see what it is. The bigger picture is get back to league duty. And if Rangers can, you know, recover from this, obviously they've got a let off of what happened at Tynecastle. And if they can get back to winning ways, I think most people will just be happy to write it off, as you say, just up on the road.
Yeah. I mean, I did see when we were talking last week just about getting to that Celtic visit at Ibrox on April the 7th with the 2-point lead intact, and if they can do that and they know, right, we're getting to this game and we win, we're five clear. That was the big thing. Obviously, the fact Celtic slipped up still gives them that chance, but to guarantee that, we're going to have to win this next wee run. Well, Dundee away, Hibs at home. No, Dundee away, Hibs at home, then Ross County away comes after it. They've just got to focus on those two games, there, don't they? And then that way, minimum, they're going to end up 2-point.
Yeah, I mean, as you say, when you look at Celtic now, I mean, Celtic, everyone talked about the pressure that's now going to be on Rangers in terms of, you know, going from being the hunter to the hunted. Well, the flip side is now the pressure's on Celtic. They've went from opposite there, from being prey, they're now predator.
Yeah.
Can they handle it? At the weekend, they showed that they can't. Obviously, there's refereeing decisions, and, you know, refereeing decisions have impacted both games. You know, Rangers are a few... You're very angry about the fact that Dan Casey was allowed to stay in the park and score the winner after that tackle on Ross McCausland. Obviously, Celtic are disappointed with some of the decision-making that went on at Tynecastle. But you've got to deal with that. That's what happens in title races. You know, this is what happens when two teams are fighting for the title. There's going to be moments. It's all about how you handle it. So far, you know, Rangers have, you know, until Saturday, they've handled most things fairly well. Celtic are just still a bit up and down. You know, they have a terrific result in midweek. Absolutely. You know, ripping Dundee apart, and then you're thinking, then go to Tynecastle, go to face a Hearts team that have just been spanked by Rangers 5-0. Can they do the same? And they couldn't. Obviously, as you say, results, some of the decisions within the game went against them, but, you know, Celtic had the chance to go 1-0 up, didn't take that penalty. So, listen, I think title races are, so it's all about nerve, isn't it? It's about holding your nerve, and, you know, As Luke Montes said, there's going to be still more twists and turns in this title race to come. So it's interesting to see which of them manages to hold them go down the final straight.
Yeah, Philip come on when you were at the press conference last week, and his comments have been shared quite sort of strong on the so-called subway loyal or fans leaving early. Were you surprised at that, or does it again just show send messages to the board? You know, he's just so short. If he's got something to say, he's a bit of a straight shooter. It's always risky, I suppose, when it's supporters. But do you think he just feels so emboldened by the run and thinks, well, no, I want to get this off my chest? Has he got a point?
It was myself who asked the question, because I'd just been at the last few games and I just felt that it was bizarre that with 15, 20 minutes to go, people were starting to eke out the stadium, and by the time you're into stoppage time, the place had been sort of half empty. The reason I asked it was because the manager made such a point. He was determined to raise this after the game at Kilmarnock to point out how much of an impact that the supporters had had at Rugby Park. And the way end was so very loud. You know, when the second goal goes in, I very seldom heard a roar like it down there. I mean, it was ear-splitting. I think, you know, the manager, he spoke from the very first day of the importance of getting a supporter base on side and what a difference that can make when you're, you know, as a player. He spoke on Friday about how when he was a player at Club Bruges, the fans there had a song from whenever he went up for a corner, because he had such a tremendous record of scoring goals from set pieces. And he says that kind of thing really gave him an extra 10% in his game. And so he's been keen to... He wants to harness that power that the fans can give. You know, we all know the special atmosphere that Ibrox is capable of, and he wants to make sure that that's working for his team rather than against them. He wants to, you know, he's demanding his players go right to the final whistle, and I think he's right to suggest that the fans need to stay with him. Obviously, we all know, and we've heard this debate a million times about, you know, individual supporters are always going to have individual reasons for why they leave early, but it seems strange that why half the stadium pretty much is heading for the exit 10-15 minutes early. So it was interesting to see that I think the majority of fans did hang on a wee bit longer until, it was strange though, but it didn't really translate into an extra oomph in that as the game went into stoppage time. Obviously they're only a goal down, 8 minutes goes up, you're thinking, right, well, there's that extra spur for the team to go on and, you know, get that, at least get an equaliser. Had a couple of goals in stoppage time. I think there was a header cleared off the line. I think Suter puts a header wide. And after that, I think some of the fans just kind of lost belief. And then you saw the sort of streaming for the exit. So, but I think the manager's right to raise it in the sense that, you know, he's demanded his players, as I say, go all the way to the fight, the last kick of the ball. Because, you know, this title might, you know, as much as there's only 2 points in it, there's only two goals in the goal difference as well. This title could be decided on the thinnest of margins, and he knows that Rangers need to make the very most of every opportunity they've got, every second that they've got. And I think in order to do that, they really need the fans back. And so I think he was quite right to make that question of the support. It's up to them to justify it to themselves whether or not they're going to go along with the manager's asking. But what we'll say is that the manager's given this fan base everything pretty much that they could have asked for so far. I think they could expect much more than them. So when he makes a request of them, they need to decide whether or not he's right to do that.
Yeah. Okay, now I know shortly will be the final call, Andy, so I won't keep you too much longer. You need to go and board your flight. But just away from current... Sorry?
I need down this pint first.
Just away from current matters, I don't know, did you see the interview yesterday that Giovanni Van Bronckhorst gave to 442? A couple of kind of... For a guy who... wasn't really that, he hasn't said much since he left, but he didn't miss Michael Beale, did he, in terms of Michael Beale's appearance for that game at home to Aberdeen, of course, when there was real pressure building and Michael Beale appeared in the stand. A lot of people said at the time they didn't think it was right. Van Bronckhorst himself coming out and saying, you don't do that to a fellow manager.
Well, I know, speaking to people around about Giovanni Van Bronckhorst, he's not been happy. He wasn't happy at the time, he's not been happy about it since. And, you know, listen, Michael Beale, when he came in, tried to justify it, said he'd been in the diary for a long time. He was just there to say hello to some people because he never got the chance when he left. But I don't think there's many managers that would stand for that kind of thing. I think we can all agree it was a bit of a poor move. And I think it was one of the things that came back to bite Michael Beale. I think there was that sense right from the off that, you know, it was a bit of an underhand move. And not many people, I think he lost a lot of respect with that move that day. Not so much in the eyes of the board, but obviously because he went and gave him a job afterwards. But I think just in general, people around about football, he lost a bit of the respect that people had for him. Because he has a very good, you know, very good coach. You know, we're led to believe he's a very good man. But I just think that left a bit of a sort of taste in the mouth. And you know, I think Gio Van Bronck was having the right to feel disappointed about it. That day against Aberdeen came at a time when he was under pressure. He managed to get a really big victory, a 4-0 win. That should have been something that he could have turned to his critics and say, listen, this is what my team is capable of. If you back me, if you put your faith in me. But instead, all the headlines were taken away and were revolving around Michael Beale's appearance mysteriously at the game. So I think for that reason, he's got every right to feel sore about it, especially as obviously the way that his Rangers reign sort of panned out from there on, and he only lasted another month or so before results went against him. So, you know, these are the kind of things that when you're under pressure, you're looking for things that build momentum. And as I say, that was something that any kind of momentum he was building, there was whatever narrative was being written around him that time was just wiped out by events that transpired in the stand. So as I say, I think he's well within his rights to feel sore about it.
Yeah, well, the other thing he did say, didn't feel he got the backing. He didn't feel as if he got the backing he deserved. And what was his quote? Hang on, I'll get it in front of me here. I believe some guys on the board could have handled the situation in another way, especially if you assess how we performed in the previous campaign. So he's always, as far as I'm concerned, our squad could have been strengthened after we reached the Champions League. So, of course, to beat PSV, get the bank the money, and he's thinking it could have been handled another way. Is he justified? Does he have a point?
Yeah, I think so. Football? I mean, Rangers did bring in 9 players that summer, but again, a bit like this summer, you had to say that the recruitment, certainly, you know, as much as this season a lot of players have come on to a game, last year there was just a feeling that there wasn't the quality required, especially, you know, the big surprising thing, thinking back to that, what is it now, 18 months ago, when they got that result against PSV that took them to the Champions League, when we've been speaking to, you know, people around about the clubs, you know, I remember Stuart Robson talking about, you know, what the potential prize funds of getting to the Champions League could be, and what it could be worth to the club, and what reaching the Europa League final would be worth to the club. And I think it was an expectation at that point that, okay, the club's made a huge sum of money here, that they're, you know, going into the... There's still a few days, a week before the window at that point closed, before they could go out and make another signing, not just for Europe, but, you know, more importantly for the Champions League, for the Premiership, because, you know, Celtic can obviously pinch the title back the season before. You're thinking, right, okay, this is, they definitely need further strengthening. At this point, you know, obviously you'd had a look at Čolak, you'd had a look at Rabi Matondo, and you were thinking, these are the guys that are going to the frontline firepower that are going to take the team to you know, to another title. And I think that as well, within his rights, Giovanni Broncos, to expect that, okay, we banked this huge sum, let's go and spend a bit of it. And then obviously months later, I think the club themselves admitted that, oh, maybe we hadn't spelled out the riches that are available, because Celtic were getting the bulk share of the TV revenue, the prize money, that it wasn't the windfall that we were all sort of expecting. You know, we were all writing £40 million, this is going to be worth. It was a lot less than that. So maybe the club should have done better to spell out that this isn't the huge, you know, pile of cash that we all thought that the club were going to get. But I know, again, from speaking to some people around about Gio Van Bronckhorst, that they had targets they thought they were going to get that didn't materialise and end up going for other players, and I think that frustrated them as well. So, yeah, I mean, managers who lose their job are always going to feel that they could be given backing. You know, I'm sure the club will argue that, you know, they did what they thought was the best at the time. And then, you know, sometimes it just depends on the manager. You know, as much as well, you know, we're very critical of the players that Michael Beale signed at the start of the season. There's not many of them that aren't contributing now. And so it just depends on who the coach is. So it's one of these things that there are always going to be arguments either way. So, you know, I think Gio Van Bronckhorst, he's the guy who's out of a job, so he's always going to feel a wee bit, as I say, sore about him.
Great. Andy, okay, well, thanks a lot for joining us. taking time out of your journey to Lisbon, and I'm sure we'll catch up with you while you're over there. I hope the weather's good, and you can keep us up to date with all the pre-match stuff, and don't forget to read all Andy's stuff from Lisbon in the Daily Record after the game. Thank you, Andy.
Cheers, Gav. Yeah.